unafraid, uninfluenced, unleashed. You're listening to American Unleashed.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of American Unleashed. I am your host for the show, and this week we're going to talk a little bit about words, definitions, and the English language and how important that is, because everybody today, they talk about, well, we know this, we know that. Well, do you? Because people throw around words so dramatically and so extremely today, and you've got to wonder if they've actually ever looked up the definition of it, especially when they start calling you names like bigot and racist and homophobe and all these other things. Do they even know what a phobia is? Have they ever looked up the word bigot? Do they know where these things come from? And so today we're going to talk a lot about that, and we're going to talk first and foremost about some of the issues that are going on in the world today, as we promised. And, of course, we just finished last week. We had the State of the Union address. Don't give me that look. I'm calling it that because that's what he said at one point. It was the State of the Union. During this address, number one is he had to end up taking two breaks, is what they had scheduled for him, two different intermissions for him. And you've got to wonder if they were just changing the pictures in his picture book like he had been using at press conferences. And also, he had a Gold Star father arrested, not removed from the event, but arrested for disturbing the event. This is a man who'd lost his son in combat for our United States Armed Forces. That's what a Gold Star parent is. And Joe Biden had the man arrested, when he very easily could have just said, okay, enough is enough. Let's move him on out of here. We've had enough of this. No, he has to have him arrested. And so that, in my opinion, that's just, it's disgraceful. The man's name is Steve Nikoui. Nikoui, I'm going to guess. I don't know for sure. But because, well, I don't listen to cable news, so I don't hear them pronounce the name. But then again, on names like this, they rarely ever try to get it right, especially when it's someone that they aren't going to agree with. But the fact is, he had a Gold Star father arrested during the State of the Union address and removed from the premises when he simply could have said, hey, the guy's causing a problem, let's go ahead and just move him out. And that's what they probably should have done. It's been done before in State of the Unions when someone has been disruptive. All they do is they get him and they say, okay, buddy, you're out of here, and they move on. But this guy, he had to have him arrested. Why such a response? Why such an over-aggressive response to a Gold Star father? That is just embarrassing to the entire nation. And then, of course, one of the big claims that Joe Biden made was to have cut, and I'm going to, this is a quote, cut the federal deficit by over $1 trillion, which even if he had done that, the reality is that so much of the money that came away from that was emergency effects that had been in effect from COVID in 2020 that were expiring. So there were tons and tons and tons of these programs that had been put into place by different officials. And what happened was they had a time limit on them. They set to expire after a certain amount of time, and they did so. But yet Joe Biden takes full credit for making sure that that, that was his idea. He's the one who cut the deficit. And I could sit here and I could go through the whole thing, but I don't want to sound like one of these talking heads who just, you know, just rips apart every little bit, because the fact is, folks, we are dealing with, and I do not say this as an insult. I say this as a diagnosis. We are dealing with a senile old man who probably doesn't know what day of the week it is. He's being used as a puppet. This is not the first term of Joe Biden. This is the third term of Barack Obama. Joe Biden is just parroting and being and saying what he's being told to say by the people around him, by a gold digger wife who, if you don't know, she was a babysitter for the family at one point. And so they had an affair and moved on, and Joe Biden marries her. And so now she helps lead him around for all these other people. And I was talking about somebody last week, and I tell you, I said there was a woman whose son had died in combat during the George W. Bush administration, and her name was Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, who was somebody who they had propped up again, same way, and used her and her grief to attack the administration at the time, which now, you know, the Bushes and the Clintons and the Obamas and all that stuff, they're all buddy-buddy. But she'd been used horribly and then discarded the second her usefulness was over, and they've never done anything with her again. They've never helped her. They never did anything for her after that. Her usefulness was done. But also, going on right now, of course, we've got many Democrats calling now for new, fresh elections in Israel. They said, well, they need new leadership over there. And the problem is there's leadership in Israel who doesn't do things the way that the Democrats want them to. And that's the that's their problem with it. They have someone there who they don't agree with, so they want them moved out so they can get someone in there they can manipulate and control. And that's just, that's not right. And some of us said, well, they need new leadership in Palestine and all this other. Well, Palestine is not, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to break it to you, is not a sovereign nation. It never has been, and they have always tried to gain sovereignty, but over and over and over again, even the people at the United Nations have discovered that Palestine is constantly a haven for Islamic terror, and they have for years been attacking Israel. There was a very telling, a picture's worth a thousand words. Everybody, we used to have that saying go around. Since the internet, we have these great memes that people put up. And they're, some of them are really good, some of them are not. But the fact is, there's one of them where it's an Israeli soldier protecting a baby carriage. It's kind of a cartoonish, kind of a animated piece. But he's down in a crouch position. He is protecting a baby stroller. On the other side, you have a Palestine soldier who is hiding behind a baby stroller. And it, that is one of the best descriptions you're ever going to see about that conflict over there. At some point about 6, maybe even 8 years ago, there was a conflict in close to a hospital, and all the media was talking about how Israelis were lobbing bombs and rockets and bullets into a hospital. Well, the problem was the Palestinians were using the hospital as human shields. And so, again, this is how the media deceives you. They tell you half stories, half truths, and they don't tell you everything that's going on. They tell it for whatever they're supposed to be telling you for. And that's what you need to watch out for. And that's why I no longer watch any of them. I don't care if it's Fox or MSNBC or CNN. All of them are absolutely horrible. And the people who follow them are almost just as bad. I will never forget one time a guy was telling me, well, if the media didn't report on it, then it can't possibly be true. The media would have reported that if that were accurate. They would have told us that instead of what they told us the other way. And I said, well, what kind of proof do you have that, and he was using CNN as quotes and all this stuff, and I said, well, what proof do you have of their reliability and their credibility? And he literally shares a video of CNN anchor Wolf Blitzer talking about how credible and accurate and journalist integrity that CNN is. And I'm just sitting there thinking, wow, you're using one of their own people to say, oh, yeah, we're fair and we're balanced and we're straightforward, and we tell you the truth and all. And I'm thinking that is just the epitome of what I'm seeing. And I had this also come up this past weekend with a friend, a woman I've known for since I was in high school. She was actually a gym teacher back in high school. And I'll admit, she's one of those gym teachers a lot of the guys had a crush on back in high school. A wonderful woman who I still think the world of in a lot of ways, not politically any longer. But I mentioned to her that I had worked in the political realm for 6 or 7 years. And she didn't say, oh, well, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you get from that? She immediately came back with, well, you must not have worked very deep or you'd know this. So her programming from a corrupt media was overriding the fact that she was talking to someone who had firsthand experience within that realm. And that's the problem, is we have got to learn to quit doing that kind of thing. We've got to learn that, to put our difference aside and listen to someone else and let them explain from their point of view, from their experiences, from what they've seen and done and been a part of in their lives, and say, you know what? I might have been wrong. You know what? It's possible that that media did lie to me. Because let me tell you, folks, I've once in a while I will turn them on if I'm on a vacation or I'm on a trip somewhere and need some noise in the room while I'm getting ready or whatever. I'll put one of those channels on, just to see if anything has changed, to see how they're doing things. And I will sit there and just, one after the other, I don't care which one of them it is, it's just one It's a fudge. It's a lie. It's a spin. It's a this. It's a that. But it is almost never the truth, because they're pushing an agenda, and they're pushing a way for you that they want you to think and they want you to believe without question. They don't want you to question anyone. Remember, we talked about that in the first episode. Question everything, and especially when they tell you not to question, is when you should start questioning the most. So, in this, we talk about political correctness, which political correctness is a disgraceful term because very little of it is correct. If you didn't know, this form of discussion was actually created by radicals. It was created by the extreme left and then introduced through moderates and their media, and saying, well, this is the only thing that's going to save us. We have to curb our language and watch what we say and all this. Well, no, this is America. We have freedom of speech. We say exactly what we want to, and we need to be able to say what we want to for several reasons. Number one, we need to be able to say what we want to get our point across, but we also need freedom of speech in a complete manner, because we also need to know, well, who the terrible people are. And so when you get someone who comes along and makes some kind of radically insane statement, like many of the Islamic leaders, and I know that's a not example of an American, but they said, well, they want to wipe Israel off the map. And to me, that is an indication of someone who's just terrible. I mean, do you want to wipe people? I've wanted to wipe ideologies off. I've wanted to wipe certain beliefs out because they are a hindrance to intellectuality and to free thought. But I've never in my life thought about, well, I'd just like to wipe that people out and that whole group of people away. I can't imagine that brand of thinking, but that's an extreme on that side of it, where comedian Dennis Miller once said that you don't have to judge anybody off the way they look. If you give them a little while, they'll prove to you exactly what kind of an asshole they are. And he's right. We all are one in some way or another, but if you give someone time, eventually they prove what level and on what different aspects they are that way. And some of them are friendly kinds. They're the kinds we get along with. They're like, wow, you're just like I am. You're just as much this as that. And we get along that way. But there's also some who, they show their true colors. And we see that a lot in politics, where they make all these great promises during election times. And of course, we're in one of those times now where Joe Biden is already jumping back and forth on his statements. He's been railing about the border here lately, yet now he has walked all that back, and he said, I don't need to go and focus on the border. The border's not a problem. That's not an issue. And let me see if I can find that quote on here. And we'll go to that. Yes, here's one of the titles on one of the cable news channels. Get ready for this. Biden finds money for Ukraine, backs off on border. Backs off on the border. Well, he made all these statements about the border to win a bunch of support from different people. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, he decides he's going to back off on the border. And that's the problem, is conservatives are very consistent when it comes to the border. Right now, a lot of us do want it closed temporarily until we get all this nightmare fixed. Then we reopen it. A border is not a wall to say, don't come in. A border wall is to say, we don't mind you coming in as long as you use the door. In other words, the legal means to come into this country. But he keeps walking back all these statements that he's made so far. And so it's crazy what you see with the statements these politicians make, especially in the election years. The Democrats have been telling the same promises for 60 years, well over my lifetime and well into many years before I was born that I've studied. And we can remember a statement made by Lyndon Johnson. I will not repeat it here because it does have the N-word in it. But it was, I'll have those voting Democrat for the next 100 years. Or was it 50 years? I can't remember the exact quote. I'll look it up. But he made the statement still. In 50 years, 100 years, doesn't matter. It's the statement itself saying that he was going to find a way to get this. And what it is that they constantly use fear-mongering in the masses. And again, we come back to the words that they use. They make promises of free stuff. We need to know there's no such thing as free. Someone somewhere is paying. And if you're one of those people who says, well, I don't care who's paying as long as I get mine, well, you might be part of the problem. What you're doing is you're encouraging, you're feeding, as the quote goes, you're feeding the monster, or online feeding the trolls. And you're just encouraging the problem. So when it comes to words, we need to recognize what words mean and what meaning they have. And we're going to go over a few definitions here in a little while. And here in a little bit, I'm going to have my producer chime in. I brought in one-third of my dictionary. And no, I did not tear it in half. It is in three very large volumes. And they're a very large size book, much larger than a hardcover novel, what you buy in the store, like a Daniel Steele or something like that, much bigger than that. They're about, 12 inches tall and about 8 or 9 inches wide, and the printing in them is itty-bitty, teeny-tiny, and even my reading glasses have a chore of reading them in good light. And it's very old school, very basic, very common sense definitions, and we're going to go through a few of those here in a moment. But we have got to stick to using the words we need for the moment without fear. We cannot fear words. You cannot be afraid of words. You have to use the words that you need to get your point across. But it also comes down to you having the responsibility. Remember, we used that word last week. Responsibility of knowing what words mean so you use the right word at the right time in the right context. And there we fall into the two of the most important words in the history of the English language. Context and intent. Now, the intent is exactly what it sounds like. What is the use? What is the intention of the word you use? It's like the N-word. Is it being used in a slanderous manner? Is it being used in a descriptive manner for historical purposes? Is it being used in a joke as part of a punchline? I've heard plenty of those that you can slip other words that supposedly mean the same thing in there, but it takes away from the punchline. And in a joke, you have to remember, and this is why people got to stop going after comedians. 99% of these comedians don't tell these jokes to be derogatory or to insult other people. It's all about humor. Even the great Don Rickles, the greatest insult comic of all time, my hero in comedy, he would insult people. He would use some of the most slanderous stereotypes on people. He would see an Asian gentleman in the row, and he asked him, did you put enough starch in my shirts this week? By the way, you know, the rice is boiling. All kinds of statements that you think are crazy. But at the time, him doing this in open, on stage, from someone who he's never met, who's simply Asian, was hysterical. Because, to be honest, for a long time, the stereotypes were funny. And Mel Brooks, the great filmmaker, proved that over and over and over. At Blazing Saddles or in Robin Hood Men in Tights, he proved that these stereotypes could be funny. And the times were better when we all weren't so offended by all of this. Because we understood it was in the context of humor. Now, and then that's how we get to the word context. What is the word being utilized in? What context it is? Is it being used in? Is it being used in a political speech? Is it being used in a joke? Is it being used in the script for a movie that's supposed to make fun of this or that? Because I'm going to tell you what, Mel Brooks had absolutely no problem making fun of white Christians either. We were a good source of comedy. If you saw History of the World Part 1 and the part about the Spaniards and the Spanish Inquisition, you know, beautiful song and dance number, the women swimming in unison. He poked fun at everything. And that was the humor in it, is that nothing was safe. I think the tagline for Blazing Saddle is, never give a saga an even break. And he was talking about these old great Western sagas that our dads used to watch on the weekends. And just using those as humor and saying, well, if you really want to look at it this way, it was kind of ridiculous. And trust me, if you really watch Blazing Saddles the right way, you will never go back and watch old-time Western the same ever again. And it doesn't take away from them, but it just gives you a new perspective on them. So we need to remember that context and intent is what we should always look at. Remember last week we said, we talked about freedom. We talked about those responsibilities. We talked about responsibility, accountability, vigilance, and education and all that. Well, when it comes to discussion, we need to think about the words of context and intent. What context is the message being used in, and what is the intent of that word or that message? Is it being used to start problems? Is it being used to insult a certain people? Or is it being used just for a joke, for humor, for sarcasm purposes? But I have that all the time online where we go into people, and not just with me, I watch it happening to others, where someone sees a word and they automatically react in a negative way. They don't notice the fact that the guy's just being some hard ass. And it's supposed to be a joke. And the constant attack of comedians is ridiculous. But I think comedy is the one thing that may end up saving society, because a lot of comedians, you've got Dave Chappelle and a lot of others who are fighting back saying, I'm not going to curb my language just for your small-mindedness. And that's exactly how they do need to react. Again, I talked about political correctness a little earlier and how it came about. It was created by radicals on the left with the intention to divide us. And they introduced it through the moderates and through the media as if, oh my gosh, society is going to crumble if we don't start curbing our language. Well, here in the United States, we have freedom of speech. We're not supposed to curb our language here. Here, quite the contrary, we're supposed to do a lot of things but curb our language. We're supposed to speak out. We're supposed to talk from our hearts and our souls and our experiences in life and what we truly feel. But they want to shut that down. And by they, again, I'm talking about the corrupt, I'm talking about the left, the right, the whole bunch, who wish to control what you and I say, what you and I do, how we communicate with each other. Social media is not safe from this as well. Social media has their standards. You know, you see those things all the time. Well, this doesn't meet our standards. Well, the problem is, and trust me, I'm a longtime veteran of Facebook jail. I have seen their comments, and I will admit I have sometimes reported comments for specific things. I don't do it for a lot. I do it for very, very specific things. And I've seen where people who have been called, please forgive the term, a Trump-tard, off the word retard, and absolutely nothing happens to them. That doesn't violate our standards. But I've seen people who are conservatives who have, or they claim to be conservative, they're more Republican than conservative. If they're name-calling, in my opinion, they're not a conservative. They might be a Republican, though. And they call them a libtard. And I've seen people suspended for that. And I'm sitting there just wondering, okay, what exactly is the difference? Well, the difference is the people who run Facebook don't like Donald Trump. So when you insult him, it's just fine. Whenever people insult white folks, it's just fine. Whenever people insult Christians, it's just fine. But boy, you say something wrong to a Muslim, and the next thing you know, you're sitting in Facebook jail whistling an old blues tune and wondering when you're going to get back on, and all of a sudden you're going after your old blogs and whatever you can do to keep busy online, which honestly, I've started taking my time off with those and reading more. And even going back to fiction and the, you know, reading for pure enjoyment of it. And one of the ones I read lately, I read the novelization of the movie Wonka, which is a prequel to the classic Gene Wilder film, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And it's a very good book. And the movie was very good. But I also see in books, comics, many other places where people are curbing their language to not offend people. Well, Let me give an example of this. Is nowadays everybody wants everything to be safe for children. They want, we know, no more jungle gyms and no more monkey bars and no more steel metal slides in the park. Everything has to be safety standard. And the thing is children are supposed to get skinned knees. They're supposed to break their arm here and there. They're supposed to get dirty. And what that does is that builds up their immune system. It builds them up as people and character. I mean, I put my arm through a window one time. I wrecked my bike. I drove my bicycle out of the top of a hayloft into the back of a truck. You know, I've had a number of injuries from when I was a small kid, and more when I was an adult, but more when I was a kid because my parents and my grandparents let me play the way kids are supposed to play. And once in a while, we will have a tragedy, but the fact is, hey, once in a while, somebody gets struck by lightning too. It's part of life. Things happen. You break an arm. You skin up a knee. You bang your head. You know, you roast your keister on one of those old steel. How many of you remember those old steel slides we had at the park and the playgrounds and the school playgrounds, where if the sun was out and you had shorts on, Well, guess what? You were going to get a hot one on your way down. Plus, there was just rocky dirt at the bottom of it. They didn't make sure there was mulch and all this hay and all this other safety stuff. You went down, and if you weren't ready, you landed on your you-know-what, and it didn't feel too good. Remember lawn darts and all these other things. Well, these are the physical side of things. Well, when we curb our language in books and comics and cartoons and television shows, then what we are doing is we are over-sanitizing mentally and intellectually, and we can't do that. Young people have to be taught that there are harsh realities in life, that sometimes people die. Sometimes people get injured. Sometimes it turns out someone you thought was good is very, very bad. You know, my time in pro wrestling, we would always have the heel turn where we'd have somebody who everybody thought, oh my gosh, he's a hero. And all of a sudden he stabs his partner in the back and he joins the bad guys. What in the world, dude? That was awesome. Well, what it did was it taught us for the fact of life that not everybody is good, and sometimes things aren't what they appear. And it comes down to good storytelling. You cannot tell good stories when you're curbing your language and you're making all these corrections for the sole purpose of watching out for other people's feelings. And the fact is my rights, my liberties, my freedoms do not stop at your feelings. My rights, liberties, and freedoms stop at your rights, liberties, and freedoms. And no, you do not have the freedom to not be offended. All right? Actually, if you really want to live this right life right, you need to be offended once in a while. Somebody needs to say something to you that ticks you off. That's one of the reasons I'm here. I'm here to make some of you mad. And some of you are already getting mad at me for saying that people should be able to say what they want. Or not say what they want. Let's talk about the Pledge of Allegiance for a moment. The Pledge of Allegiance for the United States of America, which should be in every classroom every morning, but a part of it should be optional, and that is the part that was introduced, honestly, it was introduced illegally. It was not put to a vote. It was not decided. It was just a direct order that was put in what they claimed to be for morale back in the day, but they under God, because originally the pledge did not have that in it. And honestly, if America is supposed to be the way we're supposed to be, it should not be in there. Nor should that little statement of God we trust be on our money. That was also put on there illegally. Said it was for morale. But the fact is, you can say it without that. Now, recently, Barack Obama, in the last few years, had made a statement publicly where he stated the Pledge of Allegiance and he left out the under God part. Now, when some people do things this way, they do it for the sole purpose of division. They do it because we all know Barack Obama does not support this country. He is not a proud American. He doesn't believe in the tenets of Americanism. And he made this statement so that way anybody who did it, like I do, would automatically be labeled as being in his camp or part of this. It was a way to divide us further. Instead of us sitting there and talking about this and saying, well, you know, some people don't believe the same way you do. That does not make them wrong. And I've ran into that this weekend as well, where someone flat out said that, well, you don't believe in the God that I do, and you don't believe in this and that and the part of religion, so yes, you are wrong. No, I'm not wrong. I just believe differently than you do. Neither one of us is actually wrong, because faith is in the individual. It's how you wish to believe. And if it was all together, then we wouldn't have all these different churches and all these different denominations of Christianity, because let me tell you, I've been in a ton of them, and I keep finding the same book. But for some reason, these people can't meet in the same house. So what is the deal there? Why can't they just go ahead and say, look, we all believe in the same book. We all believe in the same type of deity and in Christianity, but they have these different interpretations and they have these interpretation differences to the point where they feel like they have to separate. And politics has learned that from religion and how to separate people. And by doing things like what he did with that, by saying the pledge without the under God part, that's the way I say it. That's the way anybody should be allowed to say it and should not be condemned for it in any way, shape, or form, because they simply don't believe the same way you do. It's not, they're not bad for that. You're not bad for believing in it. You just have a difference in beliefs, and that's what makes our country so great. Nobody has the freedoms of religion the way we do, and here in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks from now we are going to kick off into the five freedoms of our First Amendment, and the first one on the list is freedom of religion. And to kind of give you a little preview of that, it was put in there and it was first on the list because that was the part that made the entire thing work. Because all 13 colonies were 13 different denominations of belief. It had nothing to do with politics. It had everything to do with faith. And if you wandered from one into the other unwelcomed, you could end up being burned at the stake as a heretic on some of them. So freedom of religion is what made the entire United States Constitution actually work and was what allowed all those communities, those 13 colonies, to come together and to join together and fight for our freedom. So you need to understand that when you use certain language, you need to be able to use it in the way that best fits you. And if it ticks somebody else off, oh well. As long as you are not committing something of slander upon another person, then that's fine. You know, you can say whatever you want. I can say, well, you got a big nose. Well, okay. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Well, you're short. Well, yeah, I'm short. Well, you're not very good. Well, honestly, I'm not. But anyway, I'm digging my own hole on that one. But you have to be able to sit there and be able to state your opinion without necessarily being attacked. Again, like I said, as long as you don't commit some kind of slanderous act, your words really don't matter that much. What happened to sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will never hurt us. You know, and I'm talking about adults here. I'm not talking about children because a lot of people will say, oh, well, don't you know what bad verbal abuse does to children? I do know what it does. But I'm talking about adults. I'm talking about grown people who still act like children because somebody said something they didn't like. Oh, boo-hoo. Grow up and get over yourself. Because honestly, you're really not that much more important than anybody else. And your feelings are not more important than my freedom of speech. Plain and simple fact. Let me say that again. Your feelings are not more important than my freedom of speech. Period. That's one of those issues that really isn't discussable because it's set that way as our founding fathers wanted it to be when they set freedom of speech in place. Is that you're able to speak out. Now, freedom of speech in the Constitution, we'll go over this more in a couple of weeks, is more about us versus government and vice versa. But we really should have a consensus about it amongst the people and be able to speak freely. And again, as long as you're not slandering it, as long as you're not doing something foolish, like if you're an employee of a company and you say just horrible, horrible things about your employer, they should be able to fire you for that. Now, yes, you're exercising your free speech, but there's certain policies within a company that says, look, if you're going to work here, you got to kind of sort of be on our team. If you're not on our team and you don't like us anyway, why are you working here? So it can come down to, outside of a government discussion, it comes down to a policy in private companies that say, okay, if you're going to work here, let's be part of the team, let's work together, let's not talk bad about this or that and publicly or make major statements bad about our company. And I'm not saying you shouldn't call out, whistleblowers should not call out bad activity. They should. But just in a general sense, if you don't like your boss or you don't like the product in your company, but there's nothing wrong with it, you just don't like it, well, get another job. Don't work there. Why should you want to work somewhere where you don't like what's going on there and what they do? So you have to be responsible. Again, we go back to that list of vigilance and responsibility and accountability and education. And speaking of that, let's get into some definitions. Freedom. I looked this up in the old dictionary here. The quality or state of not being coerced or constrained by fate, necessity, or circumstances in one's choices or actions. Now, what that means is that freedom is you being able to kind of do whatever you want to do without being constrained by certain types of laws and certain types of restrictions that prohibit you from living your life freely. Now, what happened with the United States of America? They said, well, you can do all this as long as it does not violate the freedoms of another. You cannot infringe on someone else's freedom exercising your freedom. That's where the borderline has to kind of stop. And that's one of the defining factors of a civilized society is that they have these borders on behavior that are a general, agreeable way to live. And that's what our founding fathers did when they created this country. Liberty, a right or immunity enjoyed by prescription or by grant as from a sovereign power, where a jurisdiction is exercised. Now, again, this kind of does the same thing, but this gets a little more specific in where it talks about these certain borders, these prescriptions, or done by grant. And the grant that we have is from our United States Constitution, giving us certain liberties in life. I've always looked at liberty kind of being the Jimmy Buffett of the group, kind of a little more laid back kind of thing. The dude from the Big Lebowski, that's a liberty dude. You know, kind of does what he wants, kind of laid back to it. It's not necessarily all that serious a lot of times, but it also has a responsibility to it because you need to exercise it in an adult way and in a civilized way as to where your liberties do not infringe on the liberties of others. A right. Disposed to do what is just or good. Another one is agreeable to a standard or principle. Another one, agreeing with or conforming to facts. And finally, acting, thinking, or judging in accordance with truth or the facts is what right is. Now, a right was given a more specific meaning by our founding fathers here in the United States of America, that you have certain inalienable rights. Now, whether they were endowed by a creator or endowed by the sacrifices made by our founding fathers, which is the part I believe in, because they did make huge sacrifices for what they did for us. And so you have to appreciate the fact that what they went through, that they decided they wanted to be free, and so they fought against all kinds of overwhelming odds to create a government and create a freedom, create rights that no one else had ever really had to that extent anywhere else in the world's history. And so your rights come down to specific stated bits in our Constitution. They're discussed openly in there. And again, we're going to get into that in a couple of weeks as we start on the First Amendment. And again, like liberty, like freedom, you have a right to certain things as long as it does not infringe upon the rights of others. And vice versa, they have the right to the same things as long as it does not infringe upon you. I went ahead and looked up a few other terms in the old dictionary. And we talked about responsibility, vigilance, and accountability, educated, and what I love about these old dictionaries is that the definitions are very simple. They're very straightforward. They don't do a lot of, well, unless it's this, well, unless it's that. No, it's not all. All that needs to be removed. It just needs the basic definition. Responsibility, a moral, legal, or mental accountability. Listen to that again. Here's the definition of responsibility. Very simple. A moral, legal, or mental accountability. That's one of the best definitions I've ever heard. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point. It's very, very clear. Some people might not like it because they don't want to take responsibility for certain things or parts of their lives. But responsibility also has a level of reliability to it. That's one of the words they used about it needs to have a reliability. And it also said something for which anyone is responsible or accountable. And we are responsible for ourselves. We are accountable to what we say and do here in the United States of America. And that's part of why we use free speech the way we do. And again, we'll get into the free speech side of this a little more. But here we're talking about the language itself. We talked about vigilance. Vigilance was watchfulness in respect of danger or hazard. Readiness or alertness. Now, that kind of gives a deal of, well, are you watching for the redcoats coming down the road? One if by land, two if by sea, right? But it's more about the readiness and the preparedness and the fact that you keep yourself at a certain level. And one of those levels you keep yourself to a certain level of responsibility. You keep yourself to a certain level of accountability. And one of the others is education, and you be educated, and you have a vigilance to that, to know what you're going in to vote for, what you're going in to talk about. Even if you're going to talk about something online, you should talk about it if you actually know about it. Don't just parrot what you've heard on television. Don't just parrot what you've heard from talking heads. You're not going to sound very educated if that's all you're doing, because you need to state it in ways that show that you have a passion for this, that you've actually looked into it. And educating, having information or knowledge beyond the average. Marked by perfection of performance that is the result of training and practice. And one of the words they use with educated is skilled. So are you skilled at language? Are you skilled at getting your point across without calling people names and without using rhetoric? I said it last week. A lot of times when I run into Biden supporters, I say, okay, tell me why you support Joe Biden without mentioning Donald Trump. And that one usually causes a lot of people to blow their own ears out. Because if you say, oh, well, okay, do this, but just do it without blaming or talking about somebody else. Tell me what you support about this person as an individual without saying, well, we have to have this because the Republicans this and the Republicans that, or Donald Trump this. No, 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 that's not what I asked you. Why is this specific person qualified for that specific job? Can you answer that question without blaming the Republicans or without bringing up Donald Trump? And 99% of the time, they can't do it. They always have to throw in all this other stuff. Now, one of the ones that came up when I was looking up vigilance was the simple term of vigilant. And I think this has got the perfect simple definition to it that I think we all need to think about. To be awake and alert. Now, to be awake, you think, well, I got up this morning, I'm awake. Well, are you? Are you awake to what's going on in the world? And you can have a choice as to how much you want to be awake to and how much you don't. You don't have to be absolutely knowledgeable about all aspects of every part of politics and life. You don't have to be alert to everything. And some people just don't want to get into it. That's fine. I've got some friends I know who couldn't give a rip less about politics, but they absolutely love sports. They can give me every statistic and every line and every this and that. They can give me the lineups of every football team going out there, and they can talk about how, oh, well, this guy had, you know, 8 extra yards this last week than so-and-so did, so he would did better because they're in fantasy football or whatever. And that's just fine. You have your passions, and you have what you like to do and what you love in life. But I wish people would walk into political discussions the way that they do into discussions about things like sports and football and all this kind of stuff, because they will come into those discussions with a bunch of nonsensical rhetoric, and you're just sitting there going, okay, did they hear that line on The View or from Jimmy Kimmel or Entertainment Tonight, or was it one of the talking heads or one of these ridiculous fake news channels? And believe me, they're all fakes. Said it last week, I'll say it this week, we'll get into it more when we get into the First Amendment under freedom of the press, is that today's media, around 80 to 90% of today's media is actually owned by less than 10 entities. We'll use the term entities to describe people, companies, governments, whatever. Less than 10. At least 80% of the media. And so that is one of the things you need to think about when you're looking at this, is you need to think, well, do they know this? I've got so-and-so, my buddy John over here. He knows every little detail about the Chiefs. He can give you all their stats from memory. He reads the sports page in the morning like some people read the Bible, and he can give you all this stuff. Don't you wish some people would go online with that kind of knowledge about politics when you're talking to them? How nice would that be if everybody who went into discussions about any situation had done that kind of research and looked into things the way that person did about the Kansas City Chiefs and their football? But so many people just sit there and they watch the cable news channels or they listen to the talking heads, and that's just it. And that's like the discussion I had with my old friend the other night. She literally decided that I didn't know what I was talking about, even though I had worked in it firsthand for 6-7 years. I didn't know what I was talking about because it didn't fit with her programming. And since it didn't fit with her programming, well, I actually hadn't worked in it deep enough. I hadn't done enough in there. If I wasn't thinking the way she did, I hadn't done enough. How ridiculous is that? I mean, on any other subject, you would think the person is loony. But we've come to accept it in politics as a norm, and that is terrifying, folks. I don't want you, I said it last week, I don't want you taking my word for anything. I am not going to be like some of these talking heads where I expect you to go forth and quote me and say, well, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said that. I don't want you to do that. I want you to say, well, I heard so-and-so say this, so I looked it up in this book, in that book, in this history book, and here's a quote from so-and-so, and be able to back it up with facts, statistics, accurate history, what really went on. And like I said, most of this exists outside your comfort zone. Knowledge begins outside your comfort zone. Challenge, adversity, all these things that help us grow and become a better person today than we were yesterday come by starting to get outside of your comfort zone. It means taking risks. Take that leap. Ask that pretty girl to dance. That's literally where it all starts. None of it, absolutely none of it, will be found within your comfort zone, ever. I don't care what you believe in. I don't care about your Bible. I don't care about your book, whatever it is. Whatever you've got, if it exists within your comfort zone, you're never going to grow. And making excuses for it, like, and again, I'm not trying to pick on the religious folk, but let's just be honest. The people say, oh, well, that's part of God's plan. Well, you're a church person. You're using it as an excuse to say, well, all the good stuff happens because of God. All the bad stuff happens because of the devil. No, the good and the bad come by our own choices. They come by what we do and by what others do. And so if you didn't get a promotion at a job, nobody's challenging you, nobody's holding you back, all this other stuff, you need to look at your own life. What did you do? What do you need to change? What class do you need to take? What part of your work ethic do you need to work on to make yourself better and more valuable to your employer so you get that promotion? I've heard people, oh, well, you know, I think the devil's laying all this stuff on my heart, and I feel so... he's not. You're doing this. You're choosing this. And you're choosing to make excuses to not leave your comfort zone. I want you to break free from that. One of the terms, and we're talking about language today, one of the terms we use in language that I absolutely cannot stand, I will even use the term hate. Oh, he's thinking outside the box. Oh my gosh, isn't he brilliant? He's thinking outside. Folks, there is not a box. There never was a box. The box that's there was created by your own mind and your own insecurities and your own fears, and you have to learn to knock the walls down, throw it away, get out of there, and realize, to be honest, you're not really throwing away anything because the box was never really there. You were holding yourself back. And that's the important part about learning and growing and being a better person, is going outside your comfort zone. You know, I'm not big on being the person in the spotlight. That's why I've always worked behind the scenes in so many things. So coming on here and doing this podcast was a big leap for me, because I'm not used to being someone who asks for the center of attention for a brief time to talk to you the way I'm doing last week and this week. I usually say, well, listen to somebody, go read this book, read that book. But I got so fed up, and I had so many friends ask me, they said, look, dude, you've got this whole unique aspect of how you look at all these things. You need to jump on here and tell people, you know, stop blindly following the talking heads. Stop blindly following the media. The media is the worst one. If you're blindly following the media, my goodness, folks, it's time to just turn it off. It's literally, I've run into people who say, oh, well, if that were true, the media would have reported it that way. Really? Have you not been paying attention the last 80 years? Since the end of World War II? Since the end of the war between the states? The media has been horribly biased, and it's only gotten worse and worse. I can remember when I was a kid, every once in a while, there'd be a huge scandal when the media was caught saying something they weren't supposed to. Now, it's become normal for me to watch a media program and to hear someone on there make a report on something, of something I know not to be true. They use words to lie to you. And they don't necessarily always just flat out say, well, this and this and this, and it's a flat out lie. What they use is words, and they change things. Down at the border, they call them newcomers. These are not newcomers. They're criminals. It's illegal. They're coming across the border illegally. Calling an illegal a newcomer is like calling a burglar a dinner guest. Yes, it really is that much of a similarity. It really is. The person is committing a crime. And yet the media and everybody else are trying to use these soft words and soft language to dumb it down, to dull it down, so you don't really understand it, that you even sympathize with the criminal, instead of sympathizing with the people in this country and the people who came here legally, who did it the right way. And we can talk about a lot of different people who did that. There are stories all over the place of people who came here legally, they came here the right way, and they got their citizenship. I forget who it was, somebody who recently was celebrating that they just got, I think it was Dolph Lundgren, the actor, was online celebrating because he had just recently become a legal American citizen. And I don't know what his status was before that. I know he did a lot of acting and all this other stuff, but I think he finally completely renounced the Russian citizenship and became a full American. And I'm very proud of him. I don't know if you people know this, but he's a PhD. He was a scientist before he was an actor over in Russia. He was just a really big, tall, stacked like a brick wall scientist. But, you know, he comes here and he plays Ivan Drago in Rocky IV, which someday I'll tell you a story of some of the other people who are up for that role. But he becomes famous for that, and he's done all these pictures, and everybody thinks he's this big, dumb action star. And the fact is, the man's actually very intelligent. But again, we go back to the words being used. Newcomers. Refugees. And George Carlin, and look it up on YouTube. George Carlin did a whole routine about soft language. And a lot of it, yes, is written strictly for humorous purpose. A lot of it is for the laughter. You know, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Partly sunny became partly cloudy. You know, all this kind of stuff. But then he gets into some words that were changed for very specific reasons, and they were there to change the feeling about them and change the attitudes about them. There was a condition in battle, and I'm almost going to say this word for word because I've heard it so many times. There's a condition in battle that at one point during World War I was known as shell shock. Kind of sounds like the bombs themselves, to quote Carlin. And he's right, it did, and it was given a very strict treatment because shell shock was considered something horrible. It was likened to what post-traumatic stress syndrome actually is. There's another diagnosis that's insanely overused today. But shell shock. And then later they changed it to battle fatigue. And it would later also become the statement we just used a minute ago. Shell shock is what would eventually become post-traumatic stress disorder. But if you look at the origins of the word and how it was, you're talking about men in a field of battle where bombs are literally going off around them to the point that the noise and the impact concussions and just the fact they would go off so close and they would feel the blast, even if they didn't get the shrapnel or any of the damage to it, they would feel it going off over and over and over and over on a daily basis when they're trying to sleep, when they're trying to think, when they're trying to eat, when they're trying to walk, when they're trying to talk, when they're trying to do all this stuff. They are being bombed out of their minds. And there was a reason it was called shell shock. But today, we can't do that. We don't want to use that because why? It's too telling. It's too descriptive. They wanted a term that they could end up using that could sound very, very clinical, that takes all the emotion and it takes all the feeling out of the term and gives it this clinical, this very sterile feeling that they can use for so many different things with post-traumatic stress disorder. I've seen people who have been in the most simple car wrecks who, oh my gosh, they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Or this happens or that. Oh, that's PTSD. Well, not really. If you really want to compare that to the original definition of shell shock, seriously, is that where you want to go? This is a task I take my fellows in the psychological studies field, is they often use soft language and they refuse to talk honestly with their clients and their patients because they're afraid of hurting their feelings or they're afraid of being too honest. And let me tell you something, people, what we need today is People were being too honest. We need it. I got on my doctor's case one time. He was giving me all this soft language about my weight and saying, oh, well, we think there might be this issue and we think there might be that issue. And I said, no, doctor, the issue is the fact that I won't push myself away from the buffet enough. The fact is when I order a pizza, I order a medium instead of a small. The fact is I order the large size of onion rings instead of the small. And I said, don't be afraid to tell me. Just look me right in the eye and say, Bubba, you're fat. And if we had more doctors doing this, we had more professionals being more honest with the people they work with, we would have a better place. People might be a little more ticked off when they come out of an office, but guess what? There's a better chance that their health is going to get better because somebody's being honest with them. And that's what we need. And we need that in all aspects of life. And we need it in politics so much because we are making such critical decisions for all of the people in our country. You need to be passionate. You need to be educated. You need to know what you're talking about, and you need to be honest. You need to be willing to get into somebody's face and say, you're wrong. Get over it. Grow up. Stop with the nonsense. Stop with this soft language. Stop using words that are just so horrible. Political correctness. We've got all these hyphenated Americanisms that are ridiculous. Let me give you a real fact of language here. And this is the truth, and this is going to tick off a lot of people. If you are not born in Africa or raised in Africa, guess what? You're not an African American. You're not. You're an American, first and foremost, but you're an American of African descent. I myself am an American of Scottish and Greek descent. And there's nothing wrong with saying it either way. There's not. Now, what's wrong is when you say it and you claim to be African-American, yet the people who were actually born there and or raised there, those are the people who are actually African-American. And they're people we need to talk to. I had classes at Drury when I went back to school back in the late 2000s with a young lady who had escaped from Africa. She had walked for hundreds of miles on bare feet. She had been... I'm just going to say she'd been raped many, many times by soldiers and all kinds of horrible people in her journey to escape. And she had every right with what she had been through to be one of the most horrible people on the face of this earth. She could have walked in that class and just looked at every one of us and said, I don't like any of you people. My life has been miserable, and so I don't like you at all. She had every right to do it because of what she'd been through. But she was one of the sweetest, most humble, most wonderful human beings I've ever known in my entire life. And every time I was around her, I would think about what she'd been through and then the person she had become today, and I almost would cry every time because it got to me and I understood that she had seen parts of life that I hope that none of us, none of you ever have to see firsthand. But yet she chose to be a better person today than she was yesterday. And that's what I'm challenging you to do. I'm challenging you, openly challenging you, to be a better person today than you were yesterday, to be a more vigilant person than you were yesterday, to be a more passionate person than you were yesterday, to be a more reliable, accountable, responsible, educated than you were yesterday on the issues that you wish to be passionate about. I'm not telling you to be passionate about politics if you don't want to be. If you don't want to be, that's fine, but don't get online and try to make points that all you did was hear from a talking head or from a television show, because honestly, you don't know the subject and you shouldn't be talking about it. Educate yourself. You have the freedom of speech, but guess what? Sometimes that freedom of speech is the freedom to prove yourself a fool because you talk about things you don't understand. And we all need to understand better. We all need to have that passion, that fire in our souls, that gives us that passion to move forward on these issues that we love dearly. It's like with the environment. You don't have to be passionate about every single little bit underneath that global warming umbrella. It's an umbrella scam, but let's just for a second say that it's not and say all those issues may or may not be true. Well, I feel more passionate about this than that. Oh my goodness, what in the world's wrong with you? You don't like the seagulls as much as you like the sea turtles? Oh my goodness, you're a horrible person. No. You need to step up and be passionate about the things you want to be passionate about, and don't go off on people who don't believe the same way you do. Religious folk, I'm talking to you too. I'm not a believer. That doesn't mean I don't believe in anything. It just means I don't believe the same way you do. I hate to tell you this, but it's a horrible insult when you look at somebody, oh, you don't believe in God. Oh, it must be so terrible to not believe in anything. That is one of the most vapid statements ever, to think that someone doesn't believe in anything because they don't believe the exact same way you do. It's ridiculous. And it's the same when it comes to politics. It's the same when it comes to any issue. But it's the same when it comes to words and language. Go online. Go to eBay. Go to Amazon. Go to half.com and find these old dictionaries. And I'm talking like the 60s and earlier. You know, where they come in three or four or five volumes, and any one of them could be, you know, used as a weapon in your home. If somebody ever breaks in, you pick up one of these volumes and you whack them in the head and knock them cold. Because if my producer were here, she's up working on another project, she were here, she'd tell you about this book. The thing is close to 10 pounds. And it's just one volume of a three-volume set of dictionary. Teeny tiny little printing with all these different little descriptions. Some of these things in this teeny tiny printing take up, you know, half a column page or more because of their descriptions. But like we read, and when we went through some of these earlier, they're some of the simplest, best definitions you're ever going to hear. They're fantastic. We had the one for responsibility, a moral, legal, or mental accountability. Easy, clear, to the point. Accountability, the quality or state of being accountable, liable, or responsible. It's simple. To think that words have to have these big, gigantic, long-out, drawn-out explanations that only a PhD can understand is ridiculous. And that's one of the things they lie to you about. Oh, you can't understand this because you haven't studied this. Well, you know, all you got to do is pick up a book and read. You don't have to have a PhD. You don't have to have a degree in it. You pick up books and you read. You read different opinions. You read varying opinions. You find these old school dictionaries and these old school encyclopedias that have all of these old school, very simple, very plain, very common sense, very straightforward, and very honest explanations and definitions of words and the language. So whenever you're talking, whenever you're talking to each other, the challenge I'm giving out to you is understand in what context are these people discussing this, and what is the intent of what they are saying. Context and intent are the two most important words in communications, and you have to understand them. But I've seen so many people who say, oh, the intent doesn't matter. They use that word. They use that word, so their intent was hate. No, their intent wasn't hate. Their intent was a joke, and obviously it went over your head. But the good news is it went so far over your head it interrupted Marvin the Martian's latest plans to blow up the Earth with a radium Q-37 space modulator. So thank you for that. Thank you for being uneducated and stupid to where it flew so far over your head it saved the world. Congrats. Mom, I'm sure Mama's proud. So the challenge this week is context, intent. Do you understand those words? Do you understand when someone is talking to you, what is the context of what they are saying, and what is the intent of why are they saying it? Please make sure you understand these. And if you don't, get online, get these books, understand it better, make yourself a better person today than you were yesterday. Once again, that is my challenge to you, my account. And of course, the standing challenge to put freedom first, to understand what we have to do to put freedom first, is that we have to be educated, we have to be vigilant, we have to take responsibility, and we have to make sure we stand behind accountability. Put freedom first. And if we put freedom first, we understand each other better, we get along with each other better. And that's what we need to do, because it's the only thing, and I do mean the only thing, that is really truly going to save this country. We've got to turn off the media, stop listening to the lies and the spin, and the people who don't use words properly, and who change the definition depending on their trend or depending on their agenda. You find out the definition of words and you push that definition to the moon and back and say, you're wrong. You're using this word improperly. This is how what it means, and this is what it's supposed to be about. And you stand behind it. You get a photo off the dictionary page and you send it to them, or you post it up, and you're strong about it, and you're convinced and you're convicted about it. whatever your issue is, it doesn't have to be politics. It can be sports. It can be movies. It can be. I'm in the studio now where they do the nerd informants, and so there's posters from Star Wars, and there's toys from Alien, and Michelangelo is sitting over there staring at me from the Ninja Turtles. If you're passionate about that, be passionate about it, but know your subject. Know what the words mean. Know what the stories come from. Know that this comes from that, and this is supposed to be this way for that reason. Understand your subject. There's a picture over here I think is great because one of the pillars of goodness, I think, from modern society has been the artist Bob Ross. And the painting, it's a picture of Bob Ross that's been painted poorly. You can tell it's him, but it's like somebody put too much paint on there, so it's running. But it says, be the person Bob Ross would want you to be. Bob Ross was a great man, and he comes from a group of people like himself, like Mr. Rogers or Steve Irwin, who were just good at heart. They wanted us to find ways to get along. That's all I want to do here. But I want you to do so with passion. I want you to do so with conviction. I want you to do so with education, vigilance, accountability, and responsibility. Whatever your passion, be passionate about it, but make sure you know your subject. So I will see you all next time. Next time we're going to go through a little history and a little civics. We're going to talk about, I'm going to teach you how to study history. You might think, oh, well, I know how to study history. I watch a movie, I read a book, and I know how to study. No, you don't. Maybe. We'll see. But next week we're going to go through all that stuff, and we're going to talk about history and civics and some of the basics around it. Because right now, people, what you're hearing and seeing on TV is about as far from accurate history and far from civilized civics as you can possibly get. You all have a wonderful week. I will see you next week. Take care of yourself, and always, I challenge you, put freedom first.